Country talking with their poll for this month's general election. One major difference between that poll and the polls from other organizations is that it actually predicted winners. Stairs says they were able to do that because they ran the polling data through a predictive model. That's why today my big question is, how do predictive models for polls work? According to Stairs, their poll is the first in Nigeria to use a predictive model. That's our big today. And that model predicted two most likely outcomes for the presidential election. Number one, voter turnout is high. Peter Obi is the most likely winner. But if voter turnout is low, Bola Tinubu is the most likely winner. Now, I'm sure that your big question is, how did Stairs get those predictions? They're here to tell us. My first guest, well, both guests are from Stairs. First, I have Gbemisola Alonge. Gbemisola is usually over the phone or over Skype. Today, she's in the studio live. Gbemisola, good to meet you.
Thanks
finally,
for having
me, ever, Sandra. For the first time.
Good to meet you, too.
I know. And my second guest is her colleague, Joachim Mac-Ebong. Joachim, welcome back into
Thank
the live
you for
studio.
Having me, Sandra.
Because usually it's also over the phone.
Yeah.
But this is the second time I'm seeing you in the studio.
Happy to be on radio on Radio Day.
On World Radio Day. I know. Thank you for coming. It's our birthday. Lagos, join the conversation as well. What questions do you have about the nature, methodology, and results of the Stairs poll? 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. Now, first of all, let's talk about the poll size. Who will take that? You or you? I want to talk about the poll size, right? Because I think that there's a disconnect between how the experts view poll size and how the general public see it, right? So your poll had 6,220 respondents. That's the largest size of any poll so far this season. But most of every Nigerians, you know, are looking at figure and they're like, it's small. How can 6,000 people let you know what 90 million voters will do? So this is an opportunity, you know, your chance to answer that. How do these seemingly small sample sizes accurately predict how everyone is leaning? Who's gonna go first, Joachim?
Okay, let me just start with that. I think that you don't need to have everybody. You don't need to speak to everybody possible in order to come up with something that is statistically valid and significant.
Mm.
What you need to do is that you need to ensure that the way you speak to people is random.
What do you mean?
First, so random means that, for example, you cannot talk about who Lagosians are likely to vote for governor,
mm-hmm,
and come to speak to people who are only in a Tiosa local government.
That's
a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Lagos has 3 senatorial districts, mm-hmm, 20 local governments,
mm-hmm,
and if you don't go around the state, you are not going to get an accurate view of how people are thinking about voting. So
mm-hmm,
it's so on the basic level is two things.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is that it's a random process,
mm-hmm,
and it was done over the phone,
mm-hmm,
from a database of about 30 million phone numbers.
Okay.
Dialed at random.
Okay.
To cover every state,
mm-hmm,
and as well every senatorial district.
Okay.
Now, when you have a random sample that touches every state and every senatorial district,
mm-hmm,
then you can become increasingly confident that what is going to be the result,
mm-hmm,
is as close to reality as possible.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Let's talk about the breakdown of those 6,000 plus respondents. Your report says that you selected them in such a way that there are enough respondents from each state and each demographic group to accurately model them. Tell us how that works, Gbemisola.
So, just like Joachim said, right, one thing that we did was we ensured that every senatorial district was well catered for. So we spoke to people in every senatorial district.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, the size or the number of people we spoke to per state was heavily dependent on how they sort of reflect on the INEC register. So a state that's that has more registered voters is more likely to, you know, have more respondents than a state that doesn't.
Mm.
So that was one of the things that we took into consideration, both at the data collection level and even in our and in our analysis, right? So we ensure that. So that's one thing. The idea is you can't talk to everybody, but everyone you're talking to, you have to ensure that they're representative of the people in that community. So we're not just speaking to 50 people in Lagos. We're speaking to 50 people across different parts of Lagos. So that's what we did. And then we ensure that. So we're not just reflecting just any number, because I mean, it's one thing to reflect the general population of Nigeria, it's another thing to reflect the voters register. So we ensure that because we're talking about polling and we're trying to get people's views about how they would vote, what we did was we prioritized ensuring that our sample size was reflective of INEC register both at the collection level, and even when we're analyzing and attaching weights and things like that, we ensure that, you know, at every point in time, at the back of our minds, the sample had to look like the data from INEC.
So. And you said this was a phone survey. How did you factor in the number of people who refused to participate before you finally got on a call with someone who agreed? Does that affect the results?
So it kind of affects the number of people you need to call in order to reach the number that you need to reach, right?
Okay.
And if people, again, the issue of non-response in polling is something that is already well established. So if there's that non-response, what you just do is that you then need to call enough people to make up that particular quota. I mean, you can't just say because we didn't X number of people did not pick up the phone, so that is that for that particular local government or senatorial district. No, you know, that's not how it works. So you're going to need to keep trying people to ensure that you are able to basically ensure that you get that basically just to meet up that quota there.
I see. Okay, let's talk about this predictive model now, right? Because when I first discussed your poll on the show, I got lots of interesting responses from Lagos, right? Because that's the other major addition to this poll, the predictive model. But Misola, what is a predictive model? What do you need it for?
So, if you looked at the, I'm pretty sure you already looked at the results from the data, the polls and like what we published, one big thing that we noticed is, apart from like, Nigerians were willing to answer questions on, is Nigeria moving in the right direction or not? What are the main issues that you think the next president should focus on? But when we got to questions like, who do you plan to vote for? We had a huge number of people saying they were not willing to disclose. And that's not surprising because, I mean, it's politics, right? People, and at this time more than ever, there's the rise of a third force, you know, just people being, these elections are quite, for lack of a better word, controversial, very, very, you know, it's different from the other elections that we had in recent times. So people were very cautious about what to say, what not to say. I mean, it's obvious, it's a phone call as well. You don't know who's on the other line. On the other end. So people were very cautious. And the reason why people will be very cautious is their opinion might be unpopular. Right. So someone and the unpopularity varies across different spheres or different communities. So if I'm a Christian, for instance, and I live in a Christian community and everybody's a strong Christian, me saying that my candidate of choice is a Muslim might be unpopular. People might look at me like, how can you, you a Christian, you know, and things like that. Also, if I say if I'm from a certain tribe and I say that my, and I mean, these are issues that ideally shouldn't matter. And even in the polls, Nigerians said, you know, they don't matter. They care about the competence of the candidate and all and things like that, right? But then you have people like not wanting to voice out their opinions because around you in your community, you don't know what's popular, what's the right thing to say or what isn't. I mean, you probably know, but like you don't want to offend anyone. You don't know who's speaking on the other line. You don't want to disqualify yourself as well from certain advantages that you may perceive that you can enjoy because of your allegiance to a particular party or not. So because of that huge number of people saying they don't know or they don't want to disclose, they haven't decided yet, we still wanted to, I mean, we couldn't just come out and say, oh, if 40-something% are saying they don't want to disclose, we'll now come and say, oh, the remaining 40-something% said this, so this is what Nigerians are saying. That would have been inaccurate.
Okay.
So what we then did was, based on the other responses, the other questions that we asked, what are the issues your demography. How old are you? Where are you from? Who do you think Nigeria is moving in the right direction or wrong direction? And, you know, just these different other questions that we had asked. Mm-hmm. Then we had basically like profiles of people. Okay. We could profile you based on like all the other responses you had given and your demography and everything. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we were able to then predict what your response will be. So based on, I mean, we are a product of our experiences and all the other things that we've been through and like things that we say and things that we don't say. And so it's kind of easy to, I mean, it's not easy. We had to do a lot of statistics and like econometric analysis and everything like that. But we're able to just basically predict what people would say based on like their other responses and what, you know, other people that just like them would say. So that's how we're able to predict it. And I mean, at the same time, right, because it's a predictive model, right, we didn't get the exact responses. There are different occurrences and there are different things that could make the prediction swing a certain way or another way, right? So someone who, for instance, some of, I mean, for the different models that we used two scenarios, we published two scenarios, so the high voter scenario
turnout,
and then and the high turnout and low turnout. So high turnout, I mean, are you interested in voting? Yes. You have a PVC? Yes. But low turnout, I mean, then we're now sifting through like other things. Are you interested in voting? Do you have a PVC? Okay, no problem. Are you have, do you have like, are you going to do you know who you're going to vote for? Is there a possibility that you change your mind before that day? Do you feel safe about coming out to vote on that day? Do you trust INEC's process? These are just the different extra things that may deter people from showing up on that day. And then using that, we can now say, okay, based on what these people have said, and these are questions that people don't mind answering to. So do you trust INEC? People don't mind answering to that.
One way or the other.
Do you feel safe coming out on election day? People don't mind. I mean, in their minds even, they might feel like, you know, disclosing what they truly feel is to their own advantage. Because if I say I don't feel safe, then maybe I'll get more military or more police attention. I mean, even we even ask questions like, do you even feel safe about the presence of military or police on the election day, right? So just these different things tell us, basically inform what people will do on that day. And just based on all these factors and many others, we're able to sort of infer what people would, what people's decisions are, even though they didn't voice them out.
What did she leave out, Joachim?
What did she leave out? Frankly, not a lot. Okay. To be honest, it was a fairly comprehensive overview of something that took us quite a while to do, quite a while to put together.
How long?
And quite a while. Actually, it took us like, so from the moment we got the raw data, it took us like 2 weeks.
Okay.
2 weeks to do the model, to do the various analysis under the various scenarios. So we did analysis with the raw data. We then did analysis with the prediction model at both national level and then state level, just to see how the results change. You know, when that model is applied, and we think that the model is very important because, like she said, we refuse to tolerate a scenario where the percentage of people who are either who say their choice is either confidential or say that they are who say that they are undecided is about 40-something%, 52%. There was one poll that came out, a fairly credible poll, I might add, because I mean they've been doing this for a little while. The last poll that came out,
who's on next year?
No. It was even the ANAP and NOI poll.
Okay.
The confidential plus undecided votes was 52%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't do any analysis with that.
With that, yes.
And we got something similar in our own raw data, and then we refused to accept that kind of scenario. And that's why, and that's what really pushed us to go the extra mile, just with the analysis there.
So to be clear, a predictive model is an algorithm that can predict how a voter will vote based on the other data that you know about that voter,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And your own predictive model allowed you to predict how the person you're on the phone with would vote, even if they refuse to say, this is who I want to vote for. And you interviewed over 6,000 people all over the country.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yes.
You wanted to say something, Bemisola?
Oh, yeah, I was going to add that. It actually took us, I mean, 2 weeks from the time we received the data, but like months before we had already started thinking, like running some analysis with dummy data and things like that. So it took quite a while. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this since last year. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
I want you to walk us through that. Walk us through how you built the predictive model and how it lets you predict where the undecided voters are leaning.
Okay, I mean, so it's not too different from what I said earlier. Okay. We use something called a probit model.
Okay.
So,
what is it for those of us who are not statisticians? What's a probit model?
It's a probability that there's a full term for a probability something model. the idea behind it is the same thing that we've explained already. Mm-hmm. Right. So you already know, you can basically use it to. So the idea is we're trying to decide, who will this person vote for? This person or this person? Mm-hmm. Where would this person lie based on these scenarios?
Right.
So the idea, it remains the same, right? We have these different factors, these different, this information about you. We know what you care about. We know how old you are. We know where you live, what your religion is and all that. Mm-hmm. And then based on what you have said, based on what other people around you. So, you can, to an extent, sort of determine what people would do as a result of these other factors. And that's what we did. Mm. So that's just the idea of it. We got the data. We ran a couple of scenarios, different scenarios. Mm-hmm. So what happens if, and on election day, right, anything can happen. Happens if the election is postponed?
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect turnout? Mm-hmm. How does that affect even the people? So, for instance, someone who maybe doesn't think the country is moving in the right direction, mm-hmm. doesn't have faith in INEC, mm-hmm. doesn't believe they're safe coming out to vote,
mm-hmm.
the chances of them coming out if an election is postponed
mm-hmm.
might be lower than it would have been on the election day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were already very fragile.
Mm-hmm. that's a good way to look at it. Yeah,
voter mm-hmm. anyway. Mm-hmm. So, and then when you postpone the election, there's just this affirmation in their minds that, I didn't believe in the system anyway, so mm-hmm. I'm not surprised mm-hmm. that this happened. And that would just deter them from actually coming out to vote.
Right.
Or things like, someone who maybe it's their first time voting, and on election day, there's a lot of announcements and just awareness and people coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They're already excited about the possibility. They feel like the country is moving in the wrong direction, mm-hmm. but they're eager. So one of the things that we saw is, in the Southeast, right, there's a large dissatisfaction. People in the Southeast are largely dissatisfied.
Mm.
And historically, they are not exactly the highest or the most engaged
voters.
Region.
Mm-hmm.
On election day. Mm-hmm. So many of them saying they are willing to come out to vote. Whether or not they believe in INEC's ability to actually do the right thing
mm-hmm.
It's
irrelevant, but they're going
to
come out.
They are eager to come out and exercise their, electoral rights on election day. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the things that we put into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of econometrics, a lot of statistics.
Sorry, that's a lot of big words. Sorry, we're not math people. What's econometrics? When you say econometrics, what's that?
So it's a branch of economics that's just analysis and a lot of numbers and running. Running so much.
It's basically economics and math, really.
Now, Joachim, why should Lagos trust this way of predicting votes? What's the pedigree of the use of predictive models?
So the use of predictive models is important because, like Bemi said at the top, right? We don't really have a culture of listening to what Nigerians are saying. We don't really have that culture. So I think it is only from now on
mm-hmm.
that we are going to be able to begin to build our culture.
Mm.
And that is for several reasons that we may not have time to go into in this program, right? So apart from the fact, so one day during my run, I was playing a game in my head.
Okay.
I was playing a game just to while away time.
Mm-hmm.
It occurred to me that it was only in 2019
mm-hmm.
that Nigeria has spent more time as a democracy than as a country under military rule.
Mm.
It was only in 2019.
What does that mean?
That is, it was at some point in 2019,
mm-hmm.
the number of days Nigeria has spent as a democracy
mm-hmm.
surpassed the number of days that it has spent under military rule.
Okay.
Essentially, just to understand the culture behind a lot of the things that we do, right? Mm-hmm. It's very military with immediate effect. This is dissolved. That mm-hmm. is dissolved. Mm-hmm. That one is dissolved. Mm-hmm. And if you talk, you know, you could get put in jail, get killed and everything. And mm-hmm. a large part of our political class actually did that under the military.
Mm.
So we don't have that culture of speaking and listening to each other. So it's going to take some time to build out.
Okay.
So because the votes of Nigerians are going to matter more and more,
mm-hmm.
it's now important to know what Nigerians are saying.
And
if you don't pay attention to what they are saying, and if you don't find ways of finding out what precisely it is they are saying, as opposed to what you want them to say, of course, then you are going to run into problems.
Mm.
Because what INEC has tried to do, and I think they're going to be largely successful about it, is to make the electoral process increasingly more representative of what Nigerians actually want.
Mm.
And you can't know what they want unless you ask them.
And that's what you guys decided to do.
Precisely.
Ask them.
Precisely.
Okay. Lagos, if you just tuned in, I have senior governance analyst at Tears on the show with me, Joachim Mak-Ebong. You just heard his voice. Before him, you heard Gbemisola Alonge, senior development analyst at Tears as well. Tears published a poll that got the entire country talking about some of the findings of that poll, the predictions specifically of that poll. Like I said, when we started, this poll was the very first one to predict winners. It predicted two most likely outcomes for the presidential elections. They say that if voter turnout is high, Peter Obi is most likely winner, but if turnout is low, Bola Tinubu is the most likely winner. And the biggest question I got from Lagos when we discussed this on The Big Three and Road to 2023 was, well, how did they do it? How did they sample it? And there was also a lot of dismissal. Oh, this is social media polls. And then there's also a lot of, well, 6,000 is too small of a number. So I'm just hoping that hearing the people who did the work explain the method, for the work is making it a bit clearer. But if it isn't, we'll take a break. When we come back, you can ask them all the questions that you want to ask them. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. Don't go away. I've got on the show with me today team members from Steers. Steers released us a poll. They got the whole country talking. I keep saying that with their poll from, the poll for this month's general elections. And like I said at the start of the show, a major difference between the poll that they shared and the poll that we've seen from other organizations is that it actually predicted winners. Steers say that they were able to do that because they ran the polling data through a predictive model. My guests are Joachim Mak-Ebong, senior governance analyst at Steers, Gbemisola Alonge, senior development analyst at Steers, and we've been talking about how exactly they got to the number 6,000 and how exactly they got to the number, they got to the data that showed them if people turn out to vote, Peter Obi wins. If people don't turn out to vote, Bola Tinubu wins. Okay. Lots of people are calling already. They want to join the show. But I have a few more questions before I go to full lines. Let me start with Joachim. Let's talk about the results of the survey for a bit, right? The headline is that you are predicting an OB victory if turnout is high, and a Tinubu victory if turnout is low. Why is turnout the predicting factor here? What is it about a low turnout that favors one candidate while high turnout favors the other?
That's a good question. And I think that the place to start is the 2015 and 2019 elections.
Okay.
In both elections, roughly the same number of people voted. So that's about 27, 28, 29 million people.
Mm-hmm.
What this tells you is that since Nigeria's democracy became a duopoly
mm-hmm.
of the PDP and the mega APC coalition,
mm-hmm.
essentially they are speaking to the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening is that then elections are then about moving those same people from one party to the other.
Mm.
Now, in those two cycles, that number of people has remained fairly constant, while the number of registered voters has grown.
Hmm.
And what this means, again, is that there is a growing number of registered voters who are not spoken for by either major party. Now, if those people who have not been coming out to vote in the last 8 years, if they stay away again, what then happens is that it is still the same people that the APC and the PDP are going to be moving between them and, you know, trying to get their votes, right? And you cannot out APC and PDP the APC and PDP.
I like that.
you don't have the network.
I like that.
You don't have the funds. And in some cases, you don't have some of the muscle that you will need to do that. And it then means that the answer is to go in a different direction by appealing to the people who are staying outside the political system, who are staying outside the political process, bring them into the political process, and then from there use that as a platform to victory. It's a fairly risky style.
Play.
It's a fairly risky play. But if you don't have the network,
if you don't have the money, the network,
and the money
muscle,
and all of that, then that is your most plausible path to victory.
Okay. Lagos, join the conversation. 0700-993-993-993. 01465-7190. That's for women. 01465-7190. What questions do you have about the nature, methodology, and results of the Steers poll? 99.3. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I believe... I just heard an analysis from him, from the man on the set with you. My name is Gold. I'm calling from Lekki.
Welcome, Gold.
Yeah, I still believe Bola Tinubu will still clear the pool because he has the muzzle, like he mentioned rightly. He has the muzzle. He has the manpower. He has the techniques already in place. But I still believe Bola Tinubu will clear the day.
Okay. All right, Gold. Thank you very much for calling. 99.3, hello.
Good evening, Sandra.
Good evening. What's your name, sir?
Lucky Lola from Agbo.
Welcome.
Yes, I just joined. I want to ask your guest, do you people go to the rural areas, you know, the villages to meet the, you know, people there, or just the online people and the urban city people? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Gbemisola?
Yeah, so like we said earlier, we spoke to people in every state and every senatorial district. I believe that covers both urban and rural areas. So, yes, we did cover the rural areas.
Okay, we've got comments on WhatsApp.
Sorry, and one last thing to add to that. The reason why touching every senatorial district is important is because people's definition of urban and rural may vary.
Okay.
They may vary. So the answer is to call everywhere. That's the answer.
Shola from Moe says, to ask the impact of university closure on voting in view of the fact that most of the people who registered did that during ASUU strike, but the same people were in school when voters' cards were distributed and they're released to go home when the voters' cards can no longer be collected. Don't you think this will affect the number of votes a particular candidate will get, knowing fully well that the enthusiasm was because they were supposed obedience, Joachim?
That's a good question. I just want us to remember what the timelines are here.
Okay.
The push for PVC collection began really late last year, I guess perhaps September, October, when many of the newly registered PVCs came back. Now, the ASUU strike dragged on and dragged and dragged and dragged into December. And because of that, I expect that many or most of the students who registered at home would have taken their PVCs by now.
Okay. Blessed from Cement says, how were they able to geolocate numbers of respondents called? Gbemi?
So, we used the polling, the third party that did the actual data collection on our behalf has a chest of over 20 million, I think 20 million Nigerians.
It's 30
million Nigerians, who they typically would, you know, poll from time to time. So they already have their information, they have their location and everything. And I mean, they're experts at it. It's not their first time of actually polling people. And they also, got same information while polling. So, even though, I don't know if there was any actual geolocation happening, but I'm very confident, and we're all very confident, that the information that we got was not from like a particular, it was very evenly distributed. The locations were evenly distributed. So,
okay.
That is not
important. Joachim looks like he has something to add. No?
No. No. Perfectly fine.
Okay. Muhyiddin says, these random respondents, do they have PVCs or are they mere sympathizers of Labour Party?
That's a fantastic question. Muhyiddin, for your information, yeah. Interestingly, we ensure that not only did we speak to the people who have PVCs, we actually prioritize people who have voted before.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And actually, this is, again, we have tons of insights from this particular survey that we could speak about all day and all night.
Okay.
However, in that category of people who voted before, Peter Obi still leading.
Okay.
This will be a source of concern for the established parties.
I see. Okay. Let's take a look at other questions here. You didn't leave your name, but you say that there's a possibility that Tinubu APC will win if turnout is low by steers. Makes me not to believe the poll. Again, that's a party that doesn't have a governor, senator, reps. Can win election in this system makes this poll biased and hypocritical. That same stares ruled out PDP that has been in power for 16 years, and not considering that the Atiku factor makes that poll untrue and unrealistic. How can 6,000 people determine the minds of over 200 million people? That poll is false, unrealistic, and untrue.
Well, we've already spoken about the second part of the question.
Mm-hmm.
The first part about how a party without governors and so on mm-hmm. can stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Why this time is different is because of the Electoral Act, actually.
Okay.
So prior to the Electoral Act, this new Electoral Act,
mm-hmm.
what happens is result sheets
mm-hmm.
made their way from polling units to ward collation centers.
Mm-hmm.
At various levels.
That's right.
It is at those collation centers that various types of magic happen.
That's right.
Now, the new Electoral Act says that now you can have that electronic transmission direct from polling unit level
mm-hmm.
to the INEC IREV
mm-hmm.
that can be visible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, information that is going to come out from INEC in the next few days, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
will also have the number of collected PVCs for every single polling unit in the country. That is all 176,846.
Ooh.
What this is going to do, again, further transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can actually even flag instances of voting fraud mm-hmm. in real time.
Mm.
So when you combine some of these things and then you add the beavers to it,
mm-hmm.
you then realize that governors on your side, whose main role mm-hmm. on election day is actually mm-hmm. rigging elections mm-hmm. in your favor,
mm-hmm.
that is largely off the table.
Mm.
The wholesale rigging
mm-hmm.
that we used to have before
mm-hmm.
is increasingly off the table.
Mm.
And I think that is the way and that is how the Labour Party can stand the chance in this particular cycle.
Do you think that there is an unwillingness to interface with the fact that the election process has changed?
Yes, there is. Actually, there is widespread delusion about it.
Hmm.
At all levels of society, including from people who should know better. Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Absolutely, yes.
We've got a... That was a very quick yes, there is. We've got Chris from Accra who says, please, did the stare analysis tell us about the states and regions each parties, especially LP, will get the required 25% in 24 states?
Good question. Now, I should also say that this is a very... This is actually something of quite of significant contention as well. So mm-hmm. even other pollsters who have done polls that we consider largely credible
mm-hmm.
have not also been able to answer this question definitively.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we have refrained, because what would have been the best thing for us would have been to poll people in all the states, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But we're not able to do that because actually it's fairly expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So what we did is that we just got about 500 people from about six states, mm-hmm, because we wanted to take the temperature of the electorate in states that we considered very important. So mm-hmm, we did an additional booster sample, mm-hmm, of 500 people in those six states, but we didn't have more coverage because of the expense. Mm-hmm. And as such, we have refrained from making a statement on that particular calculation.
Mm.
But we'll definitely be watching that very closely, mm-hmm, on election day.
Mm-hmm.
And now, since we are on the topic, mm-hmm, we have an election center that is going to be operational on election day at stairs.co/elections.
Okay.
Now what that will do is that it will actually attempt to collate in real time the returns from all the polling units,
mm-hmm,
and then as the day wears on, provide a picture of what is happening around the country,
mm-hmm,
and then we'll begin to have the answer to some of these questions. First of all, on turnout, and then secondly, and then most importantly, equally as important, on the spread issue, that is 25% in 24 states.
Okay, we've got
to add to what Joachim said. Mm-hmm. So we did poll every single state, mm-hmm, and all senatorial districts, mm-hmm, but like Joachim was saying, we only polled like booster. We only got booster samples, so there are six states that we believe were
booster
very
sample. What is that?
Okay.
Again, we're not math people.
There were six states that we believe are very strategically important to the election.
What are the states?
Lagos, Kano, Kwara,
Benue, Plateau,
Rivers,
and Rivers.
Benue and Plateau. Yeah. So we polled the states, and we basically got 500 extra, mm, people. We, mm-hmm, polled 500 extra people, mm-hmm, in each of these six states.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so on those six states, we can, I guess, come out and say, okay, this is what people are saying. This is how, you know, this is the possibility of getting 25% in this state.
Mm.
However, for the other states, because our sample was not as large as 500 in each of them,
mm-hmm,
we will not come out and categorically say anything. Although we polled all the senatorial districts, mm-hmm, we polled all the states,
mm-hmm,
there's a fair amount of representation,
mm-hmm,
there,
mm-hmm.
However, for you to come out and infer like with confidence, saying, mm-hmm, you need more sample than we have for six states.
Mm. I've got a message here. I agree with the aspect of the poll that states that if more people came out to vote, Obi will win. If not, Tinubu will. Most Obi supporters are newly registered Nigerians. To me, Obi has changed the narrative in 7 months. It is no longer a two-party affair. All right. Daniel Ilekki says, people do not understand what inference means in statistics. You don't need to survey 100% of the population. 500 persons are enough to infer any large population. Question to ask is how those data was collected. Well, our guests have explained that over and over and over. We've got a message here. Anything that gives APC an edge over PDP is false, let alone Labour Party. They should wait for the actual outcome of the election. They will be highly disappointed. Their methodology is crappy, very unrealistic, and unreasonable. All right. Do we have more comments here? Let me see. This one here. Anyone who keeps asking mischievously if LP is known in rural areas should try traveling outside of Lagos to see for themselves. In Bayelsa, a community that will take you 25 to 35 minutes to reach on bike. No light, just one network provider there, no clean drinking water. These people know about Labour Party. Anyone who thinks he's not popular is a joker. All right. Kingsley Yama says, Sandra, your guests have done a great job. I must be honest. Based on their explanations, their result is fairly reliable. My questions are, number one, how do they put into consideration last-minute defects to other parties by party members? Number two, what percentage confidence can they give this analysis? Mwemisola, I'll come to you with the first question, and then Joachim, I'll come to you with the second question. So this person's first question is, did you put into consideration last-minute defects to other parties by party members?
Yes, we did, and that's one of the filters that we used in the low turnout scenario.
Mm.
So some of the questions that we had asked was, first question is, will you be voting on election day? Another question is, is there a possibility that you change your option on election day?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the okay, yes, I'm voting. Okay, yes, this is who I want to vote for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then when we realized, like, we're only picking people that knew and had attested to the fact that they had made up their minds,
mm-hmm,
they were not going to change their minds,
mm-hmm,
people who said that they would come out. So the low turnout scenario is basically telling you the views of Nigerians that are sure without a single doubt that they're coming out and they're very sure of who they would vote for on that day. So they're not, they're no longer weighing options. They're no longer seeing who is, they know who they are voting for. They're not deflecting. They're not. So that's one of the things that we put into consideration. For the high turnout scenario, we only looked at people who are willing and able to vote, meaning that they want to come out to vote. They have their PVCs already. I mean, people who have collected their PVCs as at the time we're asking, not people who had registered but hadn't collected. So we also looked at people who were willing to vote. But then, again, with these people, right, if they are not sure of whether they would vote or not, if they are not sure of, if they are not confident in INEC's ability, if they are not, if they don't feel safe about coming out, they are very shaky about their choice. So we filtered them out for the low turnout scenario. So definitely we took account of that.
Okay. What percentage of confidence, this listener is asking on WhatsApp, what percentage confidence can you give this analysis?
We don't operate like that.
Okay.
I just want to say, like I said before, that elections are about a range of possibilities.
Okay.
And because it's a range of possibilities, it is our duty actually to give, to tell people what some of these possibilities might be. And we are, our confidence level is attached to the possibilities that are that we think are on the table given the analysis. We don't cast votes, we don't count votes. What we can do and what we have done is that we have presented to the public a range of the possibilities that are likely. And then we then leave it for the rest of the people to make up their mind in whatever direction. And then hopefully on that day to go out and vote, because I think that's important to engage with the process.
I am curious, though, about Atiku Abubakar, because your model has Peter leading in the North Central, Southeast, South-South. Atiku leads in the Northwest and Northeast, and Tinubu leads in the Southwest. So Atiku has two zones versus Tinubu's one zone, and yet Atiku ends up not being projected as winner in either outcome. Why not?
Yes. So in Nigerian presidential politics, you have six zones. Ideally, you win four of the six. But that was typically in a two-horse race, right?
Right.
So you probably need four of the six.
Right.
Now, in a three-horse race, I suspect that just winning three of the six will be enough. But there's a problem. But there's a but. There is all of those interactions between turnout and margin of victory and where you poll or where you stand, even in the areas where you don't win. Now, I have one interpretation that I have for his showing is that in the South, there is very little appetite from voters to see a handover from one Fulani Northerner to another one. That is my own interpretation of the data.
Okay.
And that is because if you look at the results, he's polling in single digits across the South.
That's right.
And so people are asking themselves, why would we want this handover from one Muslim to the other? Because Nigerians actually have three choices. They can violate the power rotation agreement by handing over from Northerner to Northerner, or they can violate religious balance by voting in a Muslim ticket, or they can decide to do status quo. So what we've been doing before, Northerner, then Southern Christian with a Northern Muslim as the ticket. So they have those three. They can violate ethnic balance, they can violate religious balance, or they can decide that we want it to remain status quo. Okay. And those are the three things that are before Nigerians, and then we will then see what Nigerians speak at the end of the day.
Is there a margin for error?
There's always a margin for error.
What's the percentage?
That's why we present those possibilities. Everything is baked in there. Okay. We don't want to go into...
Okay. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. Lagos, I've had on the show with me Bemisola Alonge, who's shocked that the time is up, and Drakeem Mackebong, and they're both from Steers. Thank you so much for the work you do. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Lagos, the news is up next.
Everyone is at the table for lunch. Mom...
And I want to assume that you would run because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running mate to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire those that need to be fired, are fired.
It's looking like a brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. And what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean.